Welcome to Morning with Meaning with the OU Women's Initiative. This is Adina Broder, and today we'll be learning Kinos 12 through 16. I want to dedicate today's shiur to the memory of my parents, Rabbi Saul and Rabbitzin Peggy Weiss. Today is the midpoint between my father's and mother's yahrzeits. Through the learning in this shiur, I hope that the neshamas of Harav Shaul Ben Baruch and Paraleia Bas Harav Shlomo David should have an aliyah. We're continuing discussing the morning Kinos, starting from Kina Yud Bet. It begins with the word Ahali and refers to a place that at one point had the Kedusha, the holiness of the Beis HaMikdash. This Kina describes the locations in which the Shechina, Hashem's presence, has resided and notes that each of these special places is lost to us. With this Kina, we're trying to convey that the Shechina belongs in the world and not in the heavens. This idea is emphasized with the word Po, meaning here, that ends every stanza. We're reminding Hashem that by creating the world, He intended for His presence to reside here on earth. The places that the Shechina has resided, according to this Kina, are in the tents of the Avos, Moshe's tent, in the clouds of glory in the desert, in the Mishkan, and of course, in both Batei Mikdash. By noting how the Shechina was always meant to exist in the human world and not in the heavens, we're demonstrating a loss that Hashem should feel. This is explicitly mentioned at the end of each stanza, where we describe Hashem as being concealed and isolated without the Beis HaMikdash. When Bnei Yisrael are in exile, so is the Shechina. The point of this Kina is to say that not only do we long for the Beis HaMikdash, but that Hashem should desire it for Himself as well. Kina 13 uses a play on the word Eicha, which means how can it be so? Here we ask Eko, meaning where is the merit of the word Ko? In this Kina, we list instances of the Torah's use of the word Ko, which means so, in reference to events where we had a strong connection to Hashem. We're asking why the merit of each Ko wasn't enough to protect us from this tragedy. In the first stanza, we mention that when Hashem made the covenant of the Bris Ben Habsarim, He told Avraham to look at the stars in the heaven and then said, Ko Yehiyeh Zaracha, which means so will be your children. Now we're asking Hashem, Eko, where is the merit of the Ko that Hashem said at that time? Why wasn't that promise that Hashem made enough for us to be saved? The next verse asks, where is the merit of the Ko that was said at the time of Akedas Yitzchak? Avram had used the phrase, Nelcha Ad Ko, to say that he and Yitzchak were going willingly to sacrifice Yitzchak's life to Hashem. Why didn't the merit of that deed save the Beis HaMikdash from being destroyed? We see in this Kina that we are challenging Hashem and implying that we don't deserve the suffering that we have been forced to endure. As previously mentioned, normally we are required to recognize the righteousness of Hashem in all circumstances. Even in the face of a tragedy, we bless Hashem and say Baruch Dayan HaEmet. Tisha B'Av is the one day a year when we are allowed to question Hashem in this way. Although, as we will see, even on Tisha B'Av, we always come back to acknowledging Tzidek HaDin, that Hashem's judgment is correct. In the next Kina, number 14, we say that Hashem created the world in such a way that destruction would always be followed by salvation. We see that after each day of creation, the Torah says, Vayhi erev, vayhi boker. After the night, there is morning. This signifies that after a period of darkness, there will be light. There is a medrash based on this idea. It says that at the time of creation, the Torah tells us, V'ha'aretz hayta tohu vabohu, that the world was dark and confused. According to the medrash, harei charev, those words show destruction. But shortly thereafter, Vayomer Elokim Yehi Or, Hashem said, let there be light. The Medrash describes this as Harei Banoi. This is a repair to that destruction. Knowing that there's a light at the end of the tunnel, that redemption is sure to follow the devastation that we've experienced, provides us with some measure of comfort. We continue with Kina 15, which is based on the third parak of Megillas Eicha. In that parak, Yirmiyahu warns of the suffering and misery that will happen to the Jewish people when the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. This Kina also integrates words from the Tochacha, which are punishments that the Torah tells us will result from our not keeping the mitzvos. The connection between the tochacha and the pain that the Jewish people endured is a matter of cause and effect. At the time of Chorban Bayis Rishon, the Jews weren't following the Torah. Therefore, the punishments that Hashem warned about were brought upon the Jewish people. It's worth noting that the Ramban in Parshas Bichukosai writes, Ha'alos ha'elu yirmezu l'galus ha'rishon, ki b'bayis rishon hayu kol divrei ha'bris hazos, that the curses listed in this parsha refer to the suffering and affliction that the Jewish people would face during the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. The Ramban goes on to show how each of those punishments came true during the first Chorban. This idea is the premise behind Kinah 15. It quotes three psukim from Megillas Eicha, and then cites the corresponding verse from the Tochacha. This Kinah, in which we assume complete blame for everything that happened to us, is a clear example of acknowledging Tzidek HaDin, that Hashem is correct in all that He does. The next kinah is Tet Zion, number 16. It begins with the words, Zachor asher asat tsar bifnim, remember what the enemy did inside the Beis HaMikdash. This is referring to Titus, the Roman general who destroyed the second Beis HaMikdash. He's the subject of the first half of this kinah, which describes some of his wicked acts. Titus seems to have had a vendetta not only against the Jewish people, but against Hashem himself. One incident that is well known is when he stabbed the paroches, the curtain hanging in the Beis HaMikdash. Hashem made blood flow out of the paroches, and Titus thought that he had killed Hashem. A second scandalous episode is when he brought a harlot into the Kodesh HaKadoshim and acted inappropriately with her. After mentioning these incidents in the kinah, we ask Hashem how Titus was permitted to do these horrible acts and survive. Of course, Titus was eventually punished, but not immediately. In this kinah, we contrast the brazen acts of Titus with the misguided behavior of Aaron's two sons. They mistakenly brought an offering that wasn't prescribed and were instantly killed by fire. We're asking Hashem why there is such a disparity in the two results. As we've mentioned before, throughout the kinahs, we oscillate between accepting the righteousness of Hashem's actions, as in the previous kinah, and questioning his ways, as seen here. The kinah continues by referencing a medrash in which Titus ordered four generals to destroy the walls of Yerushalayim. Three of them were able to do so, but Hashem didn't allow the western wall to be destroyed, so that there would always be a place on earth for his Shechinah to reside. When the fourth general was questioned about not fulfilling his task of tearing down the western wall, he claimed that he left it so it would serve as a memorial to Titus's strength. Titus conceded to keeping the wall, but the disobedient general was made to undergo a trial by ordeal. He was thrown off a tall tower. If he survived, he would be forgiven for defying the emperor. If he died, then this would show that he indeed was worthy of the death penalty. Not surprisingly, the general was killed in the fall. The second half of this kinah tells of an incident recorded in Gemara Gittin about 400 children, boys and girls, who were captured by Titus. They were sent on a boat to Rome and were told that when they arrived, they would be forced into prostitution. They decided that rather than be involved in this terrible sin, that they would throw themselves into the water to die. The kinah tells us, Shir v'sishbachos shoraru ka'al yam, they sang a beautiful song of praise as they died al Kiddush Hashem. This sad story has similarities to another incident documented in that same Gemara and described in another kinah. Rabbi Yishmael's son and daughter were each sold as slaves to different masters. Because these teens were very attractive, the two masters planned to force them to marry one another so that they would produce beautiful children who would be very valuable in the slave market. When the siblings found out about this scheme, they took their own lives so as not to be forced to engage in illicit relations. One might wonder why we have kinos about these two individuals or the 400 children on the boat to Rome. Yes, they suffered during the time of the Chorban, and it's true that they showed incredible Mesiras Nefesh. but why mention their deaths when thousands of Jews were killed during this period? There are several reasons. One is to emphasize that all those who perished were individuals whose sacrifices deserve to be remembered. This fact might get lost when we hear about a national catastrophe. Therefore, we have kinos about the plight of the individual. Additionally, the authors of these kinos might have realized that sometimes we have an easier time empathizing when the story is a personal one. To help us relate to the suffering and pain, they shared these tragedies of the individual. This, after all, is the purpose of kinos, to induce feelings of sorrow and mourning for how the Jewish people have been afflicted. Remembering and contemplating our nation's suffering are essential parts of Tisha B'Av and the days leading up to it. We recall these persecutions and tragedies to entrench them into our historical memory. These memories of the past are necessary to our survival in the future. The Baal Shem Tov made this point when he said, "Forgetfulness leads to exile, while remembrance is the key of redemption." Let's hope that this redemption will happen in the near future.